אסתר פרק ח' ביום ההוא נתן המלך אחשוורוש לאסתר המלכה את בית המן צורר היהודים ומרדכי בא לפני המלך כי הגידה אסתר מהו לה. Now this is absolutely astonishing. Higida Esther Mahula. Do you understand what that implies? He, what is he to you? Everything. He raised me. We spent our whole life married. Everything. Mahula. Not that they were related. Not Shahu Karovla. Ki Karovla Ha'ish. No, 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 no. Mahula. He. Because again, are we talking about reality or are we talking about continuing to play games? I want you to know what I gave up for you. This was my life. And it's not a threat to you. There's no competition. And it was so real that instead of endangering Mordechai because of their relationship, which may also even included the idea of how I used to sneak out from under the palace and go to bed with him. Because she's telling Mahula, and that was exactly what had been hidden the whole time. She might have had to tell him, because that was the whole point. The Esther who's masteret et dvoreha becomes migila, which is to open up, to uncover everything. Golui l'chol ha'amim becomes literally golui l'chol ha'amim. She has to say the truth because the new level of the relationship, in order for it to be possible at all, in a state of farce, has to take a position of extreme truth. But this means that Esther's function is so totally different from what it was that Mordechai was doing. Because to Mordechai, there was no inside and outside. There weren't two worlds. It was all on the surface. It was truth on the surface. But it never provided for a link to something that would be under the surface. He just simply refused to play any games. That's all. And it didn't achieve anything on its own. It achieved because of the fact that under the surface, there was something that was a deeper truth. And that was Esther. The deeper truth of Esther was the only thing that allowed Mordechai, I mean, obviously in physical terms, to survive this, but more profoundly in the terms that would affect Klal Yisrael, the creation of the Megillah, the creation of Purim, the change about in the fortunes, the Vena'afochu, the fact that Achashverosh could really become something, that Haman would be destroyed in the way that he was. All of that was Esther. And the only way it's possible to do that is the way Esther did it. It doesn't help to sit and beg. It doesn't help to sit and stand on top of a soapbox and talk to people about truth and reality and the end is near and repent and so on and so forth, which Mordechai was great at doing. Because what it's all based on is the deep changes that are taking place beneath the surface that are what allow paradigm changes to make a difference in the end. And doesn't help to go out and talk about it unless something else is providing the real impetus to that change. So it's at this point that we can see the difference between the two themes in the Megillah so, so powerfully. What we thought were sort of equal themes in which it's sort of like those movies that have a lot of different things going on at the same time, and all of a sudden there's intersection of the things, but they're all really independent themes. Over here, we can see the interrelationship of the Mordechai Haman theme and the way in which it handles the surface and the min ha'etz, as opposed to an Eitz HaChaim versus the Eitz HaDas, Tov Ra, but the Derech Eitz HaChaim is 6,000 years longer than the one day between the Eitz HaChaim and the Eitz HaDas Tov Ra. And it is so subtle that it needs to be lived through and it needs to be worked through, and there's no way to rush it, and there's nothing you can say about it until it emerges of its own immense power. And it was that the other theme, which was the Esther and Achashverosh theme, Surprisingly, because you would think that's the last place where that's going to come. The seduction, the paranoia, the rape. That's crazy. Something's going to come of that. And it's amazing. You'll ask people, so what really happens in the Megillah? They have no sense of this at all. They think that it was about persuading Achashverosh that he should get rid of Haman. Obviously, it's nothing about that at all. Nobody persuaded him of anything. It was a sudden recognition in which he himself became aware of the sudden shift in the universe, as if mechanisms had locked into place and everything was all of a sudden completely different than the way it had perceived it before. It's a very different story than the way that it appears on the surface, because people will focus again, the way Zeresh did and the way Haman did, on what's happening on the surface. Well, it looks like he wins this round. Oh boy, what's going to happen next? And it was nothing of the sort.
On the surface, or 50 meters above the surface.
Yeah. Almost.
I was wondering about Ahasuerus' motivation. It seems as if his condemning Haman is more to do with the fact that Haman is after his wife, as opposed to what Haman wants to do to his wife's people.
And Mordechai, you were bothered by?
You had mentioned that Esther had accused Haman of wanting to manipulate or really dominate the relationships of Ahasuerus to...
Right. So, I mean, both of you are pointing really in a similar direction. There is a medrash that addresses the subtext here in a nicer way than the direction you're taking it. And that is that Haman had an ulterior motivation in getting rid of Vashti, that he had his own daughter that he believed he was going to be able to install. And of course, very much of a lesser degree of manipulation than what you're talking about. I mean, you're talking about a profound psychological need to control him in a way in which he would really be the bite.
I was wondering if that was related to the 30 days he hadn't been with her. Maybe there was something
wrong. Yes, that's right. I think that the fact that the response here, remarkably, is in terms of the bayit. Take a look at what was done in this pasuk. Vayomahu natana melech Achashverosh l'Ester HaMalka et Beit Haman. Tzorer HaYudim. The reference to Beit Haman, particularly, brings out the woman element, specifically the bayit, not et kol asher lahaman. It's something else. It's the Beit Haman specifically that's been given over to his bayit. It comes only later from Esther to Mordechai, the next pasuk. So that it seems that he himself is actually responding on a deep level, closer to what Mordechai is suggesting. I mean, our Mordechai is suggesting, rather than just the simple meaning of the fact that he found him on the bed of the Malka. But if we consider what the Psukim are bringing out, it's not just clearly a coincidence that this is the way in which the king talks about him, or that the way the Gemara puts it, that the Malachim were pressing him down on that bed. A sort of a trick. I mean, there's no just tricks, cheap tricks. It wasn't a cheap trick. It's clearly an indication of something profound. So that the control that he was exerting is indeed very much seen as a control that had to do with an actual sexual control. We find the same thing in terms of the B'nai Eli, in which we call them having sex with the women at the door of the Mishkan, where obviously no such thing took place. But the idea was the control, as the Gemara says, Bitoch Shahu et Kinehem, the idea that they would be able to control when these women would be allowed to go home and when they would be able, therefore, to sleep with their husbands, that itself was viewed in a Freudian sense as a very profoundly sexual act. Here, what it is that he's doing, that Haman is doing, is no less being brought out by the Pasuk. In the same fashion. And the whole thing is really strange. I mean, if you think about Haman, he comes across as really, now that we look at him, in retrospect from the first moment and begin to see the way the parasha is stressing his involvement with the women, there really seems to be something very perverted about his entire approach, this crazy Murphy Brown business and his own personal lording it over the way Ahasuerus would relate to women, but in his own home, he's asking Zeresh for all of the, what it is that Zeresh is telling him, well, it's all over, his baby Amon. It's a very, very...
He was even soiled by his daughter.
Yes, yes. So the whole thing, it's such a contrast that here on the one hand, he comes across almost as henpecked. You know, like the first thing he's got to do is he's got to ask the Eitza of Zeresh. And she tells him, you know, you don't have a chance. No faulty. Like, what? Wow. This is the guy who said, we can't let women speak up. Yes, honey.
It's the final word.
It's very, very much as if he's letting out all of his frustrations. He's getting, he's beginning to come across more and more as the facade of his power crumbles. As an extremely weak, vulnerable, controlled individual who is, you know, 2 feet tall, who's trying to actually make himself bigger than he is. Absolutely, absolutely. It's consistent with the whole, his extremely, extremely profound feelings of inferiority vis-a-vis Amon and Mordechai that makes this thing so terribly important to him, even though it's out of all proportion.
Delusions and, of grandeur.
No, it's not delusions of grandeur. It's true. It's true compensation for profound inferiority. The fact that he was ready to sell himself as an Eved in that way, and that it allowed it to happen, didn't consider what the implications would be in using up the funds that had been given him by the Melech. All of these things point to somebody who.
Why a barber is not a king, and he was a barber. What's wrong? Why can't
we acknowledge? Yeah, that's already complex. The issues of that. There's tremendous stress. By the way, you're taking me on really on a tangent. But I mean, the very fact that it happens, Amon is killed on the day of Akrovas HaSeorim, which is the only hairy grain, and this relates to the Osher, which is the same Otiot that everything that dragged him down. That he's Nidgaya BaOshro, which is what we talked about. There's many, many very, very subtle references to all of that part, but you know, it's a little bit too much for this particular shiur. But certainly all of those things in which he's exposed, with each passing pasuk almost, he's exposed as being a lower and lower lowlife than we ever thought. So that in the end, it's no wonder that the king is really ready to turn against him in this fashion. Everybody's ready to turn against him in this fashion. And it's really what it is that Esther did, as the Gemara said. One of the things that she wanted to do was to be Mekaneo Bamelech, Mekaneo Besarim. And perhaps the most telling of the Pshatim about what it is that she wanted to do is remarkably, according to one of the Gemara, just the quote of the Pasuk, Lifnei Shever Gaon. Lifnei Shever Gaon means before something is broken, it's always in its height. And that we spoke about before, that the taller they are, the harder they fall. But it's beautiful. The way the Ralbag puts it is that this is the natural course of affairs, because hine ha-ga'ava v'ha-ga'on v'gova ha-ruach hu ha-siba el ha-shever v'la-kishalon. You always make mistakes that way. You always get yourself into ridiculous positions of overreaching. And this is Merumas, in the same sugya, it's amazing, the same sugya that discusses this, discusses the way in which the Melech extends the Sharbita Zahav. So it points out that we have a Kabbalah that one of the Malachim, we spoke about one lifted up her cheeks and her head, and one coated her in chesed and made her look appealing. But we didn't speak about the other Malach. The other Malach was there to extend the scepter so that she could touch it. Now, the Gemara continues that the extension of the scepter, there's a whole machlokas how long it extended for. So the Gemara says that we have the same machlokas when it comes to the story about Paro and Bat Paro, that Amata. We have the same story of Shinei Rishaim. So the story of Shinei Rishaim Shibarta Lifnei Shever Gaon. Okay, so the Gemara is not relating to that Shever, which initially is brought in the story of Og Melech HaBashan. So we have this weird story. Og Melech HaBashan lifts up an entire mountain, which is the size of the Machane Yisrael, and decides he's going to drop it on them. So he balances on his head as he walks over, you know, the way an Arab would carry a mountain, you know, and he's ready to throw it on to the Machane Yisrael. Some ants come and eat out the area right above his head, and the mountain sits over his head. So then he attempts to pull it off, but his teeth grow out and extend into the mountain, so he can't pull it up because the mountain is held in place by his teeth. How much was the extension of Shinei Rishaim Shibarta? So the Gemara says, Shinei Rishaim Shibarta should be read as Shirivavta, which is to extend out. The implications of the relationship of this, the Lifnei Shever Gaon, are remarkable, because what it means is that you inevitably overextend yourself to such an extent that you're trapped by the overextension. That's the point. So the teeth, which are the symbol of that which it, you want to use to devour and to grind you up, and I'll just simply eat all of this, are the very things that get caught. And this is it's so remarkable, because if you consider modern history with the modern Amalek, with the whole story of Germany, it's exactly the same story. It was in insane overextension, and the overextension was built essentially around the hatred of Yisrael. We cannot wait was the same idea. All you needed to do is wait another winter to attack Russia after you finish off the Western Front. Meshuga, you have to be to start with the Eastern Front. Fine. You want to do an Eastern Front, but at least don't send away the most essential units to the south just in order to make sure you get the Jews in time before they run away. That whole idea of the Mehiru, I mean, he overturned the decision of all his generals in doing all of this. It was all in order to get a better chance of destroying Yisrael. Exactly what happens over here. Vayivez beinav. We're going to let somebody get away. And Mordechai is going to get away with that? Absolutely not. It costs you everything. Overextension, 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 and the unwillingness to wait. That's exactly, that's the only thing that won the Second World War for the Allies. I mean, anybody who reads the history from the point of view of those who were in charge of the Allies understands that the vulnerability was such that all it needed was carrying through. They had nothing to do, because they had zero weapons, they had zero organization, zero strategy, nothing. But it was because of the movement in the wrong direction that just gave them enough time. Because, we have to take care of this first. So again, the same thing happens over here. And as the Gemara says, that's what she's trying to do. Get him to overextend. Lifnei Shever Gaon. Let everybody become jealous. Something will happen. And so here, the giving over of the bayit of from Achashverosh's point of view to Esther was particularly poetic justice. But what's interesting is that the greater poetry of it is that Esther turns around and gives it to Mordechai. Why do I say the greater poetry? First of all, because he gidla ma'ula. In other words, he understands that the relationship of him to Esther is the relationship of Esther to Mordechai. But how was he saved initially? What caused this entire thing to take place? Be Mordechai vayomer Mordechai leEsther vatomer Esther lamelech b'shem Mordechai. So when the Hatzalah comes back the other way, the Melech hands over Bigsad Viserys, so to speak, to Esther, who probably hands it over to Mordechai, which is going back where it had come from originally. So that the Hatzalah had been based on that first movement of Mordechai to Esther Achashverosh, comes back now from Achashverosh to Esther to Mordechai. And every last bit is inverted. The last thing that Haman had achieved was getting the king to take off his ring and putting the ring onto Haman and saying, you write whatever you want, and you take over. He takes back the ring, his own ring, that he had given to Haman, that he had taken back from Haman, and hands it over to Mordechai. And it's at that point, and at that point, so that obviously if he hadn't done that, then it would have been completely inappropriate for Esther to have acted outside of the relationship to give over the bayit to Mordechai. But once Ahasuerus himself accepts the relationship between Haman, between Mordechai and Esther, and not only that, but recognizes that it was that relationship that saved his life. That's a much deeper thing. In other words, this is a different Ahasuerus. This is an Ahasuerus who is now able to reconstruct not only the broader historical events going all the way back to Shaul and Agag, but who's ready to look at the events of his own life and to understand what he's been dependent on in truth and what are the underlying threads that have made him what he is and what are the things that were all lies. Now, deep Hakoras HaTov, true Hakoras HaTov. Hakoras HaTov not for, in the gratitude sense, but in the true sense of recognizing what his life is truly dependent on instead of the lies that he had made of it. Therefore, as soon as Esther says Mahula, instead of resenting Mordechai, he says, so that's how I found out of Biktani Vateresh. So that's how it was brought. So it was all your relationship with Mordechai all along. And this party that exposed everything was all because of Mordechai, and so on and so forth. So therefore, the giving over of the ring is almost a conscious v'na'afofu. So this is a different Ahasuerus, and the difference begins, I believe, Rabbi Tzai, not in terms of how we see him in general as a different human being, not the moment that he speaks for the first time to Esther directly, because that we could have explained as a reaction based around his kavod and that he would never want to be talking to her directly because she was only a commoner and so on. But remarkably, you know what is absolutely different about Ahasuerus? Is the fact that he jumped up and walked outside of the room. That is so completely and totally out of character in everything that we know of him until this point. It was the first human thing that Ahasuerus did, right? Think about it. It was always a question, how's this going to look? Who can I discuss it with? Where do I speak to my lawyers? How do I get my spin doctors? How can I control myself so nobody notices? And for the first time, he's a human being who just is totally overwhelmed by a situation, needs to get some air, and wants to get some perspective on what's going on. He's going through something for the first time as a human being. And it's because of that that when he comes back, he's a changed man. And he's begun to see everything in a completely different light. And it's here that we can actually expect Ahasuerus to start acting like a human being. So the farce is over. At this point, the farce is over. There's no more craziness that goes on at this point. Now there's almost a committed willingness to create the poetic justice of the whole situation and to make it real so that in retrospect, the fact that it was dealt with in a real way changes everything that happened in the beginning to be part of a real story instead of part of this insane staging. And therefore, he accepts the fact that Mordechai is who he is, gives him over as the true poetic justice, the whole bayit of the Haman that had attempted to destroy his bayit and was saved through Mordechai and Mordechai's initial bayit, which then had become his. I mean, you see the complexity of the relationships.
Why is Rabbi using some hesitant phrases? Rabbi said it's almost a conscious, almost a vilna v'chul, it almost seemed...
Right, why not? Well, I don't have rayas that it's conscious, but I have rayas that it's human. And a human being does things without necessarily having to work it out in every last detail. But we'll see as we go along how much of it he understands. Vatosef Esther vatdaber lifnei ha-melech vatipol lifnei raglav. And here is the first time, and this is clearly conscious on her part, because it is such a word-for-word response. We know that the entire story begins with whatever level of breakdown there had been, as we mentioned earlier, in Yaakov Avinu's ability to struggle with Esav. It was that initial loss to Esav in terms of the Gid HaNasha that was the only thing that had gone wrong. And therefore, it implied a vulnerability in Yaakov Avinu to things about Esav for all generations. The conclusion of that battle, as Chazal bring it, but Rashi actually brings it in the Pirush on the Pasuk, is Vayeth Vayitchanen lo. He cried and begged him, can't we wait till we get to Beit El? HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you your new name. And he insisted that Sarosh El Esav would be the one who would acknowledge that although whatever appeared to be on the surface to be phony was profoundly true and real. And it's with this Vatef Vatitchanen lo that she undoes that initial, those same exact words of the Malach that was the last thing that it was that Esav had to admit to. She now gives over. Remember that Haman had made the Tzaka Gedola Umara, which was the result of that failure in Yaakov Avinu. And this restoration of the Vatef Vatitchanen lo, Li'avir et ra'at Haman ha'agagi, was utilizing exactly that element to destroy Esav's power in Amalek. Take away whatever it is that he had done, and take away even his thoughts. Et machshavto asher chashav al yudim. Now, what is that supposed to mean, take away his thoughts? How does the king hear it? I'll tell you what I think it means. She doesn't simply say, take away his plans, atzato, ala yudim, which is what we would have thought. It's take away his thoughts. Now, the inyan of the thought, of course, is that it's in the background. It's not something that everybody is aware of. And that is exactly what she's being meramis to the king. She wants him to understand that the only ambivalence that still remains in this whole story are the original letters. They were planned to keep him in the dark, or to allow him to claim that he was kept in the dark. Right? Now remember what happened before. What happened before is that there were two sets of letters. He writes, on the one hand, El HaChashtanim, El HaPachot, and so on, and all the Medinot. But Galui L'chol HaAmim is only the words, Liot Atidim L'yom HaZeh. Be ready. We don't know what it's ready for, but there's going to be big things happening. The hidden information that was given to the Pachot was enough to make Galui L'chol HaAmim a time in which it's clear that if it's going to be Kristallnacht, it sure ain't going to be in the church. And that was enough, just as it is whenever there's ever a wink from the government to allow anti-Semitism to raise its head. So immediately the assumption is, okay. We understand that we're not supposed to acknowledge that, but that's the way it is. What she's asking is to use the initial ambivalence, which was only a machshava, to undo that machshava. Had it been open, then we wouldn't have been able to do anything because of the fact that the letters sent by the Melech, as we saw earlier, completely lock him in. Since he was signed on it, he can't undo it. We saw that in the desperation that the Melech has to undo the Gzeira against his beloved Daniel, and he can't do anything about it. So, therefore, let us watch what happens, because this is amazing. Vayoshet HaMelech LeEsther et Sharbit HaZahav. Which means that I now am taking
They look backwards at that original Sharbit HaZahav, about all you went through and the dangers that you put yourself into. And I now extend it to you, not because I was trying to look away, and not because, okay, let's see what she wants, but because I love you. And she stands. Vatokom Esther Vatamod Lifnei HaMelech. And now he's asking, without saying a word, you see. Until now, it's begging him. Now she's talking to him. And it's a beautiful pasuk because there was no exchange. It's all thoughts. It's all understanding each other for the first time. What he's saying is, you don't have to sit and beg. I understand what you went through to get to this point. You understand that the last time I touched you in this fashion, it was a different world. And she stands up without a word. I see how dramatic that is. And now she starts talking. Vatomer, imal ha-melech tov. But of course, this is what it's all about. Exactly the words that were used before. Imal ha-melech tov yikatev la'abdam. Yes, because we've identified for the first time good and evil, you see. So at this point, you want to be really good? Instead of the business about imal ha-melech tov, he should become a murderous, genocidal, internationally known criminal? You want to talk about something good? I'm using the same words. V'imatzati chen lefanav, because indeed this is relationship, completely relationship-oriented at this time. This is true chen. And kasher hadavar lifnei ha-melech v'tova ani be'inav. If you think that this is the right thing to do, and you see me as being good, not desirable, good. This is unbelievable, the stress on, not the way it's been up until now, in playing to your whims and giving you the honor that you want. Now I'm asking you, do you believe that I represent goodness and that Haman Hara Hazeh represents exactly the opposite? Then what you need to do is Yikatev la shivet asfarim makshevet Haman ben Hamdata Gadgi asher katav la beidet ha-yodim. You've got to get those original orders taken back. Because I won't be able to survive. Even if it's just the relationship to me as a good person, as a person that you care about, I won't be able to make it. He speaks to both of them, despite the fact that she was the one that had been doing all this, all the talking. Not only does he speak to both of them, he doesn't speak to Esther and Mordechai. He speaks to Esther Hamalka and Mordechai HaYehudi in their original roles. So he's now going all the way back to when we were introduced. Who are these people? What was Mordechai standing? I want to talk to you as what you stood for. And I want to talk to you from where you came. Hine beit Haman natati le'ester. V'oto talu ala itz asher shalach yado b'yehudim. What is this supposed to mean? Is he saying, I've already done whatever I can? If that's what he's saying, well, I've already given beit Haman to Esther, and they hung him up. And what more am I supposed to do? Leave me alone already. How much can you ask of me? But that's not what he says. What he says is, Vatem kitvola yudim kitov be'nechem b'shem ha-melech. Write whatever you want. How in the world does the last part connect to the first part? Lichora, there's only one way to connect it. He's saying like this. The entire meaning of the original letters was totally ambiguous. And yet it was Golui L'chol HaAmim. That's what it's called, Golui L'chol HaAmim. Now, what made it Golui L'chol HaAmim? The fact that, of course, everyone was convinced that everyone that they know is an anti-Semite. And therefore, if the government is saying, be ready for big stuff, because we're finally going to get rid of criminals around here, it's got to be the Jews. Will they still think that? I just took the greatest anti-Semite and handed him over into the greatest Jew, Mordechai Yehudi.
We just hung the guy that was the centerpiece of the anti-Semitic movement in this entire empire, right? So you no longer have to change the letters. That's the point. Because the ambiguity is being addressed by what had happened. All you need to do is write intelligently enough that the message gets across with the new ambiguity. The new ambiguity might be understood by Golui L'chol HaAmim that it was a trick. They got us all out of the closet, and now that all of the anti-Semites have exposed themselves, now the Jews are being told to get ready. This is awful. Therefore, he says, write Ketov Banichem, B'Shem HaMelech, V'Chitmu B'Tabat HaMelech. Just remember, we can never take those letters back. Ki Ketov Asher Nichtav B'Shem HaMelech V'Nachtom B'Tabat HaMelech. In La'ashiv, there's no way to take it back. There's only a way to change the ambiguity. Vayikaru sofrei ha-melech ba'itahi ba'chodesh ha-shelishi u'chodesh tzivan b'shlosha ve'esrim bo vayikatev k'chol asher tziva Mordechai. Word for word, I mean, it's amazing. Word for k'chol asher tziva Haman, k'chol asher tziva Mordechai, with one addition. Not only to the achash tapanim v'apachot v'sarei ha-medinot, which is word for word before, but El ha-Yehudim ve'el ha-kash tapnim v'apachot v'sarei ha-medinot. Uh-oh. People think, wait a minute. The special diplomatic pouch went to the rabbis. What's that all about? Asher mi-hodu v'yad kush, sheva v'esri me'o medina, medina omlina kichtava, v'yam v'am kilshono, ve'el ha-Yehudim kichtavam v'chilshonam, v'yichtov v'shem ha-melech ha-chashverosh. This is literally all word for word. Vayachtam b'tabat ha-melech. Vayishlach svarim b'yad haratzim basusim roch v'arechesh ha-chashranim b'nei ha-ramachim. Which the Gemara says, we don't know what that means, so therefore that means you don't need to understand the translation of Megillah, because whatever this was in local terms, who knows? But it was some type of very special, okay, maybe it's the Pony Express or something, but it's a local thing that we've got. We've lost the meaning of. And look what was written in the letter. Asher natan ha-melech la-yudim asher b'chol ir v'ir li-ke'el ve-la-amod ha-nafsham la-shmid ve-la-arog la-abed et kol chel amu b'dinah tzarim otam taf v'dashim u-shlalam lavoz. Literally, word for word, b'yom echad b'chol medinot ha-melech ha-chashverosh v'shlosah asal ha-chodesh ha-basar ha-chodesh ha-dar. Exactly the same words, except for the fact that the ones that were in trouble were the Hatzarim Otam. And then it was their taf that Shema on the same day and so on and so forth. But that wasn't the Pachegan Aktav. The Pachegan Aktav, which were the copies that went out in public, keeping everything just as ambiguous, was as follows. Really, you have to look at the earlier psukim to remember that this is word for word what was written in the original letters. So the Pachegan Aktav, which was Galui L'chol HaAmim, was Liyot Atidim L'yom HaZeh, except this time it said Liyot HaYehudim Atidim L'yom HaZeh. Get ready. So of course now the entire thing is retroactively seen as, well, obviously they had kept it ambiguous for a good reason. And now it's all exposed as this unbelievable plot with that rotten Jew who was the one that took over the entire household of Haman, with Achashverosh plotting behind the scenes, putting in the very woman who would destroy him, so that we should all be exposed, Lina came the Oyvehem, so that vengeance be taken from their enemies. Haratzim Ruch Ve'arechesh Achashverim, the Pony Express ran out Mevohalim, they were, what was the word you used before? Panicked to get out there in time. And so we have every last element of Haman's glorious plan
being not only in actuality the Mumuchan, but rather being perceived by everybody as having been Mumuchan, to destroy them, so that it becomes now a Hachona of Hachona, in that it's actually seen as a plot. That's an amazing story. And at last, Mordechai Yatza Milichrei HaMelech, even though he wore the Levush Malchut before, now he takes the Malchut that was given over to by Yosef HaTzadik to Binyamin at the very moment that he had found the instant at which everything was about to turn, in which his own plot of keeping everything totally ambiguous was a moment away from completely turning upside down. It was those clothes that he gave at that moment. And these were the Chamesh Chalifot Smalot that were given by Yosef to Binyamin. Tchelet, Fachur, Ve'ateret Zahav, Gidola, V'tachrich, Butz, V'argaman, V'air Shushan, Zahala, V'samecha. So this is the, instead of Air Shushan, Navocha, instead of the confusion and mourning, Sak Va'efer, this became now the turnabout that created the Mordechai who had gone out initially, Vayizag Zak Kagidola Omara, the misery, the sackcloth, the mourning, was turned here completely into a victory in terms of the very issues that had started L'chatchila, the whole thing. And there's a beautiful story in the Yerushalmi, famous story that everybody quotes, but not realizing that it's part of the story of the Megillah itself, because the end of the story references this pasuk. And that's the famous story where Pchia and Reb Shimon bar Chalafta were walking along the road, and they see the breaking dawn. And this, of course, is Ayelet HaShachar, which is Esther. Lam Natzeach al Ayelet HaShachar is the breaking dawn. And so Reb Chia turns to Rabbi Shimon and he says, Kachi gdulatan shel Yisrael. And others have the gu'ulatan shel Yisrael. It's kim'ah kim'ah. It goes little by little, but it's a geometric progression. As it gets closer to the end, it starts to go faster and faster, just as the breaking of the dawn. The chol masha olechet yirababa olechet. So it's a geometric progression. And that's the same thing we have over here. Ki bitchila, we have Mordechai Yoshev b'shar ha-melech. And then we have v'yikach ha-manet ha-lavush v'tasus, which everybody thinks, gosh, that's the big moment. But then you have Mordechai Yatza b'lifnei ha-melech with the real lavush. And then you find La'yudim ha'ita orav v'simcha v'sason v'yikar, which was the complete sense of Geula. And this is also, well, I've mentioned to you that all of the various shitot in the Gemara opened up the sugi of the Megillah in a different way. We spoke about the Ba'atzaltai Nimacha Mekareh, the Shiflut Yadayim Yidlof Abayit, but one of the approaches, the approach of Rava, was to contrast Birvot Tzadikim Yismacham Uvimshol Rasha Yanacham. The difference between the impact on society of an individual who is true and real and tzadik, Birvot Tzadikim, refers to Mordechai v'Esther. Yismach am, as it says, like you might tell Rav v'sason and so on. Mimshor Rasha yeanach am, that's Hamelach v'aman yashvu l'shtot v'yair shushan navocha. So that there really is, they saw this approach to the Megillah, is to see the way in which the initial Ra that only comes out at the end had caused so much pain, so much unnecessary suffering to anyone that had come into contact with the Malchus in any way. Whether it was the insanity of the gathering up of the women or the pain that was inflicted on, it's not only on the Jews, it's on society as a whole. This type of thing is so destructive, as we see the immense costs to humanity of anti-Semitism, of what, I mean, the entire 20th century was stained and ruined by the attempt to destroy Israel. This is not a megalomaniac focus on ourselves. It's like the central reality of everything that took place. formed the way in which people really experience life for hundreds of millions of people, billions of people, actually, for an entire century. And therefore, the Megillah on one level is really a very profound description of Tov v'ra, not only as they are in terms of Emet v'Sheker, but of Tov v'ra in terms of the building of empire, of its connection to a melech who is led astray by Ra, and how even that can be turned back to Tov from a woman who could say V'tova ani beinecha. La'yodim ha'itari ura v'simcha v'sason v'yekar. So everyone is familiar with the Gemara of the analysis of the ura v'simcha v'sason v'yekar, that it refers to specific things. Ura, says the Gemara, refers to Torah, because it says V'torah or. Simcha refers to Yom Tov, because it says V'samachta b'chagecha. Sason refers to Milah. V'chino amer sas anochi alim ratecha. Yekar elu tefillin, because there's the kavod of tefillin, because it says V'ro'u kol amei haaretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha v'yer'u mimecha. And Rav Elazar Agadol omer elu tefillin sheberosh. Now, let me point out that that is a fascinating coincidence, because, of course, the very next pasuk is Yer'u mimecha, is the terror that people feel of the Jews. Uvechol medina umdina, uvechol ir ve'ir. Every country and every city, and that means the overall areas, which later on will be referred to as Orei HaPrazot, and ir ve'ir, which is outside of the medina, in the sense that the ear itself is its own unique place. The place, any place at all, Asher Dvar HaMelech V'Dato Magia, triggers Simcha V'Sason LaYodim, Mishte V'Yom Tov, V'Rabim Me'amei Haaretz Mityahadim, Ki Nafal Pachad HaYodim Aleihem. So this idea of the fear of Yehudim is clearly going to be related to the Yikar. Not only that, but it's so obvious that the Yikar is the reversal of the idea of Keri and relates so directly to the Yarok or Yarok Roket Haita of the Gemara in Esther that it would be ridiculous for us to say it's just a loose word that's being bandied about over here. So that means that there's something about the way that Ora Simcha Soson V'Yekar is experienced that leads to the events in the next pasuk, in which the response of the Yehudim is so powerful that everyone around them is terrified by them and attempting to act as if they're Jewish. Mityahadim. Well, they pretended to be converts, or we wouldn't accept converts that are Shalom Hashem Shamayim. They said that, but that's called Mityahadim, that they accept upon themselves to be Jews. So what is unique about that pasuk, Ora v'simcha v'sason v'yekar? Something very, very unique. It's clear that the experience of the yekar in tefillin is what leads to nafal pachad ha'yudim aleihem. I mean, obviously, the day before when they walked out in their tefillin, everybody just threw stones at them and said, dirty Jew. I mean, there's nothing magic about the tefillin. You put on the tefillin and all of a sudden they're bowing down to you. So that means that the two psukim are profoundly interrelated, in that the yikar that suddenly expresses tefillin is really part of their responsiveness to such an extent that they really are perceived as whatever these things are supposed to mean. Other people see it. Now, the common denominator of that is that all of the four things that are mentioned over here, ora, v'simcha, v'sason, v'yikar, are not just hints to issues. They are the feelings about what the issues consist of. In other words, if the pasuk had said, La'yudim haita Torah v'yom tov v'mila v'tfilin, that would have been ridiculous. What's unique and beautiful about the pasuk is that it's telling us that for the first time, when you have Torah, it is in Torah. It's light. When you have Yom Tov, it's not Yom Tov a way to behave. It's Samachta b'chagecha. It's the Simcha itself that you have. When you have Mila, it's not a piece of skin. It's sasan. The sasan ochi. There's this sense of wild, abandoned joy. It's sasan. It's not just I'm happy. Sasan ochi alim rotecha. Wubiaye. And of course, the yakar is the expression within me of what I sense. That, I mean, obviously, that's the underlying meaning of the pasuk. It's saying that your transition that we just spoke about, the fact that there was the understanding of the way in which the very problems had turned out to be the way in which the world runs, in which the world works out, means that there was a new, real sensation, not a conception. There was an experience of living things that until then had been acts that became so linked to the idea of the makom acher, to what we call the makifin, to the world of the space in which you live, that bria means something, that the things that were just religious things to do, you schlep in, you yawn, you take out your tefillin, you try to hold your eyes open, put on your tefillin, take out your mirror, see if the tefillin fit, you know. Oh, God, it's another bris mila today, I'm telling you, I'm going to be late to work. You know, the thought of your own bris mila, come off it, man, what do you think I am, a pervert? And so on and so forth. I mean, here it's exactly the opposite, right? Every last thing which was to me, you don't even notice, or if I notice, it's a burden, or all of a sudden becomes so much part of my internal experience that I don't even relate to the thing as it is anymore. I don't see Torah as a thing, I just see it as light. All the concepts of enlightenment, of the excitement of light, of the bright lights, of the oragonas, of the hidden meaning of things, that's what it means to me now. Yontav isn't the food and sitting around a table, and it's just pure joy, and so on and so forth. That, I think, more than any other pasuk, and that's why we start off every week with that pasuk. Because more than any other pasuk, it's a description of if you're going out into the world, and we already saw there were these two levels, the levels of the makifin and the levels of vatef vatitchanein lefanav, of dealing with the ugly realities that are on the ground, that's the pasuk we need. To remember that these are not little things. This is what the most profound experience of life directly touches upon. Because of that, when you are that way, the impact that it makes on people around you is astonishing. I mean, when you had those prisoners that would dance in front of the Nazis, you know, and besimcha, because it was Yom Tov, or because it was Rosh Hashanah, whatever it was, and they're going to be killed in minutes. I mean, it just, like, they just were staggered. There's enough alpaka. It's terrifying. I mean, you want to kill them because it's so scary. It's an unbelievable feeling. What are these people? Are they people at all? And this is essentially the change that this parak overall has succeeded in achieving. Taking two levels of life that looked to be so, so different, and recognizing that the true meaning of a new paradigm is learning to live inside of it, not on its periphery, so that everything takes place inside of you, but rather the adjoining realities, one within the other, so that you don't expect to find a direct line between one and the other. You just expect to realize that things end up working out, whether it's on the level where there's nothing left to do, or whether there's the dirtiest things in the world that are left to do. Both end up being the same to you.